Case number 08-7123, T Street Development, LLC, Appellant versus Durgy and Durgy et al. Mr. Murphy for the appellant, Mr. Hirsch for the appellees.
Mr. Murphy.
Good morning, may it please the court. Tom Murphy on behalf of T Street Development. Now, I recognize there are two issues that are part of my appeal, and I also recognize that my argument on the settlement agreement is by far my strongest argument, so I'm going to focus what little time I have on that issue. The bottom line is this case should have never gone to trial. On March 14, 2007, T Street Development and Durgy and Durgy agreed on all material terms necessary to form an enforceable contract. They did this as part of a mediation session in front of Judge Facciola. The terms of this agreement were spread on the record. Not only that, the parties on the record told Judge Facciola, it is our intention that this agreement is enforceable pursuant to Otero v. Robinson. They cited the case. The terms of the agreement were as follows. Durgy and Durgy was to pay $15,000 in 30 days. There was going to be an attempt to sell the property. If the property sold during the next 3 years, Durgy and Durgy would pay my client $63,000 more at closing. My client had a right of first refusal during those 3 years. It could match the terms of any contract deemed acceptable to Durgy and Durgy. If the right of first refusal was exercised, T Street Development would get a $63,000 credit at closing. If the property did not sell in those 3 years, T Street Development would get a payment of $38,000. Every one of those terms was explicitly stated on the record. It was spread on the record. The terms here that were spread on the record are in far more detail than was the case in the East Bank case, which I cited in my brief. In the East Bank case, the court said, quote, the enforceability of the agreement comes from the definitive character of the obligation to perform, not a precise description of the ways in which the obligation will be fulfilled. In East Bank, Herbert Miller merely said that he would cooperate. That was the extent of their agreement. I'm going to cooperate with your effort to acquire the Georgetown Park Mall.
Didn't the magistrate judge held that there was no agreement on a material element, namely the lease pendant? Right?
Judge Kessler held that there was no agreement on material
right.
terms.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Yes, you're right. You're correct. It was Judge Kessler.
And that is the whole hook in this case. And
right.
I'll be honest with your honors. Well, I'd always be honest, but you really want to cut to the chase?
Yeah, that would be
my position is, mm-hmm. and the cases support this, remedies are not material terms.
But the question is whether they were material to these parties.
Right. That's your problem.
Not whether they're generally material, but whether they're material in this case.
That's
what the judge found, and I mean, there was a complete disagreement over this before the magistrate judge. The parties couldn't agree, and they asked for more time, and they never resolved it.
What Judge Kessler found, yeah. This is an exact quote from her opinion, there was no agreement on the scope of remedies or any of the important issues about remedies.
Right.
And my position is, as a matter of law, remedies are not material.
You didn't respond to our question.
Remedies can never be a material matter in a contract. Never?
That is correct, Your Honor.
The parties say that as part of our deal, Remedies has to be part of the deal. Of course they can be material to the parties.
That is not what the Tauber case says. That's not what the Duffy case says.
No, the party's agreement is an agreement. They can put whatever they want in the agreement. The law doesn't foreclose that possibility. And if a judge finds that the parties meant to include, they would not have considered, the court says, a deal without these remedial requirements because of the problems they have been having. That's a perfectly fair finding if, in fact, it's accurate in a particular case. And the law does not say it cannot be.
Your Honor, again, I respectfully disagree. The Tauber case says terms defining a party's right in the event of a breach are not considered material terms, quote, because they are not necessary for the parties to understand how they're expected to perform the contract itself. And this holds true, and this is another quote, even if the parties are expected to negotiate over possible default terms. And the reason is the law always provides you remedies. The law does not provide you a price or a quantity. It always provides you remedies.
If we disagree with you about that legal proposition, do you then, that's your argument, right? You then agree, I take it, you would concede, if you're wrong about that, that there's no basis for reversing the district court's judgment on this issue.
That is correct, Your Honor. Okay.
So your whole argument turns on that issue.
If you really want to whittle it down to a fine point, yes, Your Honor. Okay.
Yeah, and understand what you're suggesting, which I'm suggesting is facially implausible. The law, of course, can provide remedies to the extent that you have standing to be in court and you have a cause of action. That is not to suggest that the parties can't agree to more or less in many contexts and make it clear as between them that it is important that they're agreeing to more or less and that a court could not go beyond, even though in the normal case where the parties haven't agreed to remedies, a court might go beyond or less because the parties have made it absolutely clear we will not cut a deal unless we include how we will resolve certain issues. The law does not say that parties can't have that as part of a contract.
Sure they can.
If they mean to and you do not have a meeting of the minds, then there's no contract.
The distinction here, Your Honor, parties can always add terms about remedies. Of course they can. The issue is whether they are material in the sense that they will prevent the formation.
What Judge Tatel has tried to suggest to you, materiality depends upon the intent of the parties.
I understand, Your Honor. What I'm saying is there are certain things that are immaterial as a matter of law. In the Tauber case,
well, you're back where you started. You're saying the parties can never make remedies material, and I have never heard of such a case.
If Your Honor has an opportunity to review the Tauber
case. No, I heard what you said, and I've read the case, but I heard what you just quoted. That's not what that case says. That case does not say the parties can never make remedies material part of the contract. That's not what that case says.
Again, Your Honor, I respectfully disagree because the case says explicitly, even if the parties expected to negotiate over possible remedies or possible default terms.
I hear you. Okay.
And Durgy and Durgy, the only material terms they claim were in dispute were remedies. What's going to happen with the list pendants? Well, law is going to tell you what happens with list pendants. If a case isn't pending, you can't have a list pendants. You've got to take it off. But let's also focus on the fact that Durgy and Durgy filed a motion to enforce the settlement agreement first.
Right.
So what's
that got to do with anything?
Because they explicitly said multiple times in their motion to enforce the settlement agreement that there is no dispute that the parties...
But they withdrew it, right? It was never acted on by the court.
They did withdraw after 4 months.
And maybe that does show that they intended to be bound, but you still need a contract. You still need an agreement on the material terms. So,
and you disagreed with what they filed.
Right.
There's a distinction. We filed an opposition. D&D filed a motion to enforce the settlement agreement that said, court, enforce our version of the settlement agreement. And in that motion, they even said, it cannot be disputed that they previously agreed to each of the material terms of a binding settlement agreement. That is their words. Our opposition was, you're right, we did agree.
So let me see if I understand. So if I say I have a contract with Judge Edwards, okay, but I really don't, that contract can now be enforced?
I think
just because I said I thought I did?
I think if you say in a sworn pleading to a federal
I say a sworn document, affidavit in this court, I have a contract with Judge Edwards.
I think that's...
And I, in fact, don't.
I think
that's enforceable against me?
Hold on. Your point was These remedies, they were left undecided on the record in front of Judge Facciola, and they were obviously important to D&D. They were material to D&D.
No, just that, stick with my question. D&D, just my question.
Right, but my point is...
No, I want you to answer my question.
If I say
in a sworn affidavit that I have an agreement with Judge Edwards, and in fact I don't, he can enforce that agreement against me?
I think if you say... We have agreed on all material terms.
That's not my hypothetical.
The problem with your hypothetical.
That was not my hypothetical.
Can't be a problem with his hypothetical.
It's a hypothetical, right?
It is hypothetical.
Fair enough.
Right.
Fair enough. Right. Under your exact hypothetical,
right.
I would say the answer is no, you can't
right.
just.
That's this case.
No, it's not, and here's
it
why.
Is because they're now saying they didn't agree on all material terms.
Now that I've conceded your hypothetical, may I explain why I disagree with it, Your Honor?
Of course.
Your position was based on the assumption right. that these terms were material to D&D. And the second they go into federal court and say, we agreed on all material terms, that is a concession that remedies the one thing left undecided was not material to D&D. And again, my position is the law always provides you remedies. The law doesn't provide you...
Are you arguing estoppel?
Excuse me?
Are you arguing estoppel?
It doesn't fit within the formal parameters of judicial estoppel, but if you want to look at evidence that D&D thought they had an enforceable agreement and thought we had reached a meeting of the minds and agreed in all material terms, they said it. And this pleading didn't sit in the courthouse for a week. It sat for 4 months. For 4 months, they let that sit there. And then they filed another brief when we came forward and said, you know what? Let's just have this the transcript be our settlement agreement. And that's when they came forward and said, well, we never agreed in all the material terms. But T Street Development has never disputed that there was an enforceable agreement reached in front of Judge Facciola. When we opposed the motion to enforce, that was when Dergy and Dergy submitted their document and said, court enforce this. And we said, wait a minute, this includes a bunch of terms that weren't stated on the record. Our position all along has been what was stated on the record is an enforceable agreement. If the two kids can't play nice together in the sandbox and get this thing reduced to writing, then the transcript can be the settlement agreement. It is an enforceable agreement. The parties said it.
And you said, but one thing I want to be able to do is file a lease pendens in this case of, in the case of a failure to tender a deed, and then you ask for a week to work out this last-minute glitch.
And
obviously, that sounds very material to me.
Your Honor, again, the cases. All talk about even if parties say they're going to negotiate over certain terms later, that does not prevent.
No, we need to work this out. It means we haven't resolved what's before us.
That doesn't mean it's material, Your Honor.
Well, the district court judge made a finding, and I'm not sure how it's wrong. And your assertion of law that it can never happen is one I've never seen. So,
well,
I mean, as you said to Judge Tater, you're riding on that argument. As a matter of law, the parties can never make this a material term. That's absurd.
Well, again,
that's
Your Honor.
That's just not correct.
Well, Your Honor, I disagree with the interpretation of the cases, but at the end of the day, if your position...
You're one case.
Excuse me?
You're one case.
Well, it's two cases, Tauber and Duffy.
There's no body of law that says that. Your two cases don't say it, but there's certainly no body of law that says that. The parties can't make remedial matters a material terms in a contract. That makes no sense.
That even then, Your Honor, then fine. Where is the evidence that it was material to D&D when they filed a brief saying we reached an agreement on all material terms? That is a concession that either there was an agreement on all material terms or the remedies were not material to them. I mean, I believe that if you're going to file something in a federal court and you're going to take a position, that it should not just be what is convenient at that time to defeat a motion. If you're going to file this and say it, and they didn't say it just once in that brief, they said it multiple times. You need to be held to that.
All right. Any more questions, Judge Taylor?
No.
Judge Edward? All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Hirsch?
May it please the court. I also would like to use Mike. Colleague's verbiage, Mr. Murphy's cut right to the chase on the issue of the remedies.
Wait, before you do that, are you still maintaining that the district court lacked jurisdiction?
Your Honor, I have nothing more to say, Judge Tatel, than what I said on the papers, and I'll be very clear about that. I'm relying strictly on how Judge Urbina in the Park case construed.
Okay, but if we don't agree with that decision, then what?
If you don't agree with that decision, Your Honor, then I don't want to dwell on it anymore. If Judge Urbina's wrong, I'm wrong also, because I'm relying entirely on Judge Urbina's interpretation, and I'd like to really move on and hope that you'll affirm Judge Kessler on the settlement, on the merits, and you'll affirm the trial judgment, which is unassailable.
By the way, if she didn't have jurisdiction, that's not the remedy, right, that we would...
Great. If she does not have jurisdiction, right. It is not a remedy.
Yeah.
Then all you can do if she lacks jurisdiction, Judge Tatel, is to affirm her, but on the lack of jurisdiction ground, not on the merits ground.
Yeah. Okay.
But I really don't want to dwell with that, with all due respect, Judge Tatel, because I thought I had an obligation to bring to the court's attention that there is a, seemed to be to me, a jurisdictional impediment after I read Judge Urbina's decision. But if Judge Urbina is wrong, I'm wrong also. I have no further argument, no further mental thought.
I hear you. We'll go on to your other argument then.
I'm sorry, to the merits?
Whatever you like.
Oh, thank you, Judge Tatel. I agree 1,001%. With the notion that Judge Edwards has advanced here, that there is no such thing as a doctrine of immateriality as a matter of law for remedies. And I say that for two reasons. Actually, you know, this court's not writing on a clear slate, on a new slate. One of the cases that Mr. Murphy relies on, Georgetown Entertainment versus District of Columbia, 496 A. 2nd, 587, lays out the District of Columbia Court of Appeals test at 590 for materiality, exactly for this kind of case. Real estate specific performance, where the trial judge denied the relief and he was affirmed by the court across the street. And the test for materiality is exactly the way Judge Edwards posited it. It's what the parties deem important. It's a deemed important test. The evidence is absolutely overwhelming. Starting with the four corners of the transcript before Judge Facciola, that to me, the defendants was a critical issue. I dare say that if we had not reached agreement without the defendants, there could not have been a cornerstone for any attempt to settle this case. And it was just not just the issue of removing the defendants, but I wanted protection against having it refiled. And I think that's what Judge Edwards has picked up from the colloquy between Mr. Greenberg and myself and Judge Facciola. Then when we walked out of that courtroom, there was no meeting of the minds on whether Greenberg and his client, the TSD, had any right to refile. My position was adamant. Your sole and exclusive remedy after you remove the defendants is a motion to enforce a consent order before Judge Kessler. His point is, well, my remedies, I want to have the wiggle or the flexibility, if necessary, to file. I try to contract around this. Judge Edwards, you're absolutely right, Your Honor, and I can tell you what mine said. When I was appearing before Judge Facciola and negotiating with Mr. Greenberg, I didn't know every case that's cited in these briefs, but there's two cases that I was very, very aware of from my real estate litigation experience. One of them is the Taubert case, Taubert versus Kwan, and the other one is this court's decision involving Ammerman versus City Stores. And my intent was expressly to contract around those two. I did not want my remedies to be dependent on the trial judge having to do what the trial judge did many, many years ago in the Ammerman case, where the trial judge, I think it was Judge Gash, enforced the agreement saying that, well, I can look at evidence of what the prevailing rents are for shopping center tenants in this area, and I can divine from that and reasonably imply missing terms. I didn't want to have that situation. I wanted it all laid out in a consent order, where the consent order became the second material thing. So when we walked out of Judge Facciola's courtroom, there were two material items that had to be attended to. We had cataloged them, we knew what they were, but there was no meeting of the minds, let alone something that shows that we reached agreement with reasonable definitiveness on it, or definiteness, is the correct legal term. And those two items were the remedy, that lispendence could never rear its head as a remedy, and secondly, that we had to have a consent order because I was bargaining and contracting around all of these cases where the courts imply terms reasonably, which gets me to my second point.
What about you? What's your response to his argument that you filed a motion to enforce the contract?
First of all, there is no patent inconsistency, and I'd like to explain the context. There's a huge fundamental difference, Judge Tatel, between what I filed and what I asked for and what I said to Judge Kessler, enforce it because there's been a breach by repudiation. They repudiated what I tendered. Therefore, they're in breach. And I asked her to enforce it not based on the transcript. I knew that the transcript was not an adequate basis or foundation for enforcement. I said the transcript as supplemented by a subsequent order that I had drafted and tendered to Mr. Greenberg on March 23rd, okay, 9 days, Judge Tatel, after we left Judge Fagiola's courtroom. So it's apples and oranges. He wants enforcement based on a transcript. I'm saying the transcript is not an adequate manifestation of an alleged agreement or the let alone the terms of that agreement. It is inadequate. All it does is catalog the issues that the parties thought material. It resolved all of those but two, the consent order, which was absolutely critical for me. I can tell you there would have been no discussion. I would never have appeared before Judge Fagiola and allowed a representation to be made on the record if I had to take it with him having the ability to put a list pendants back on at some point. And secondly, we have to have not only the agreement, but we have to reach a meeting of the minds on this critical issue. So we had two material items, Judge Tatel, that when we left Judge Fagiola's courtroom were still pending. One unresolved, the one that Judge Edwards aptly picked up on, the scope of the remedy if he had to file a motion. Could he get a list pendants or could he not get a list pendants? Mr. Greenberg was even quibbling with me over whether he could file in Superior Court. My position was always adamant, you cannot go to Superior Court. I don't want to see a repeat performance of this. And the reason it was 1,000% material that we should have immunity from a second attempt to tie up the property, because this case is nothing more than an attempt to put a cloud on someone's title based on something that is a rather thin case, to put it very mildly. Now, my colleague, Mr. Murphy, doesn't say anything about the underlying merits, but you can tell how weak this case was by reading the 25 findings that Judge Kessler made very specifically. I think the most important part of her decision is footnote number 5, Your Honors, where she says, in substantial part, my findings of fact depend on the credibility assessment that I observed, and the findings are rather emphatic on who she believed and who she chose not to believe. This is a case reviewable by this court under the extra deference or the super duper deference standard of Anderson versus City of Bessemer, Alabama. And this is a case where she's absolutely entitled to maximum deference, and he hasn't come even close to showing that a clear mistake has been made. Lastly, scope of review is important. And I think Judge Edwards, Your Honor, you alluded to it somewhat. The Georgetown case that I cited, Georgetown Entertainment v. D.C. that I cited earlier, but this is a case that they like to rely on, 496 Atlantic 7 at 590. In the same page, Judge Edwards, where the court across the street talks about the deemed important as the materiality test, also says what the review is. And this is a specific performance case. The review is clearly erroneous. And lo and behold, what's the authority that they cite? Hearst Radio versus Good, which is an old D.C. Circuit case from 1937. Still good. D.C. Court of Appeals cites it in 1985. Hearst has never been overruled. Still good law. And I think Hearst is the proper standard. Judge Kessler made two findings in her transcript ruling on day one of the trial on the settlement. One is no meeting of the minds on certain issues relating to remedies. Two, material terms, that's in there. Counsel has conceded that for him to win this appeal, to get a reversal, he'd have to basically overturn the whole edifice of what Judge Kessler said regarding the aborted settlement attempt based on materiality. Materiality, the standard is clearly and manifestly wrong. Hearst Radio versus Good, 91 F. Second at page 556. Based on that standard and the rigorous requirements of the extra deference test under the Bessemer case, this case is one of the most deserving cases that I could think of to come before the court on a common law contract issue for a clear affirmance on all aspects of the case.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Does Mr. Murphy have any time? All right, why don't you take a minute?
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honors, my colleague came up here, and one of the things he said, and I wrote it down, quote, the evidence is absolutely overwhelming. There was no agreement on material terms in front of Judge Facciola. Then why did he also then say, quote, although the parties contemplated the execution of a formal settlement instruments, including a consent order, it cannot be disputed that they previously agreed to each of the material terms of a binding settlement agreement. He also said later,
if you include his proposed consent order, it makes sense. That's what he's already explained. Looking at the transcript only.
The issue of the consent order all comes back around to reducing an agreement to writing. And we all know the cases say that if even the parties intend to later reduce an agreement to writing, unless they explicitly state we don't have an agreement until it's reduced to writing, the more formal oral agreement is an enforceable contract. And that's what we had. We have someone who came in with such absolutes on his motion to dismiss. Undisputed that a final enforceable agreement contained the material terms of the party's settlement.
Including his proposed consent order.
Excuse me, Your Honor?
Including his proposed consent order.
That can't possibly be.
But that's what his argument is. So you're misstating his argument. He's saying, and it looks to be correct, that he came in and said he wanted to enforce the transcript as explained in his consent order. That's not coming in and saying, I think the transcript does it.
I disagree, Your Honor, and here's why. His proposed consent order wasn't at that hearing on March 14, 2007.
Nor was his proposal, nor was the document that you're talking about. It came after the fact.
But what I'm saying is he says in his brief, at the hearing, March 14, 2007, we had a deal. And then he comes in this court and says, oh, evidence is absolutely overwhelming there was no deal. And I just, again, want to draw Your Honor's attention to one passage in Tauber, and then I will be done for the day. And Tauber is a D.C. Court of Appeals case decided in 2007. Furthermore, and this is from 938 A. 2nd at 730 to 731. Furthermore, even if the parties expected to negotiate over possible default terms, the mere fact that a contract, definite in material respects, contains some terms which are subject to further negotiation, that's exactly what we had here, quote, will not bar a decree for specific performance. In such cases, the contract is construed to mean that the parties would agree upon reasonable terms which a court can ascertain if necessary. This is exactly what happened here. The parties said, we're going to negotiate over some default terms, and then they couldn't agree on them.
Right.
But the law provides you remedies.
We have your argument. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.